Welcome to Heart of Iowa, where we explore the visions, actions, and ideas of people in Central Iowa. Today, we will listen to a lecture called In Pursuit of the Perfect Pig, given by Carl Blake. Blake's lecture was recorded as part of the National Affairs Series on Innovation at Iowa State University on October 18, 2013. The talk was co-sponsored by Bacon Expo and the Culinary Science Club, as well as the National Affairs Series and Committee on Lectures, which are funded by the government of the student body. Blake is a pig farmer, tech startup entrepreneur, computer consultant Cara Blake, and he is on a quest to breed the country's tastiest pig by following a 19th century German formula. According to his website, quote, "The fat is nearly perfect in its balance. Not too fat, not too lean, making his pig called the Iowa Swabian, one of the most sought-after gourmet pigs." Blake also owns and runs the Waverly Home Bakery in Waverly, Iowa. Let's listen to him describe his experiences in his lecture called In Pursuit of the Perfect Pig.
Good evening. I guess I'm not an expert on anything. All I do is I raise pigs on this farm, and I really want to start off by telling you how we got started in this thing. My background is working in computers and networks and high-end networking, and immediately you think, well, how'd you get from there to here? And that has to do with the computer industry and the internet. There was a huge buildup, obviously, of putting in thousands of networks and thousands of computers, and then all of a sudden, it's done. You know, in a few short years, all of a sudden, all this computer work is done, and every building is now networked in huge strides, and there wasn't much computer work to do, so everything was kind of ramping down, and I knew that I wanted to be on the farm. I like being on the farm. I don't like living in town at all. I either spent all my time in computer rooms, you know, really, really cold computer rooms. I had a bad accident in 2007. My daughter was born then, and I hit a culvert at 60 miles an hour head-on. And I broke the three most important bones in my neck five places. In fact, I was paralyzed or internally decapitated for a little while in my truck. And it was upside down, and my face, I was bleeding, and I broke my leg, and they said I'd never do this again. This is determination. They told me I had to have an operation to be able to do this again. And all I did was keep working on it, and eventually after a year and a half, I could do it. I spent almost 2.5 months month in intensive care, and then after that I got out while they fixed my neck and didn't have to wear a halo, put me out there and said, here, you need physical therapy now. Since in college I went to UNI, I played a little football, I worked out a lot, I knew how to use all the machines, and I said, I don't have to spend $1,500 a week to go here, I'll just go hang out at the farm because I can lift bales and I can lift feed and I can do all these things if I have to. Chase something down with a stick. You know, whatever I had to do, I could at least get myself back into shape. And that's what I did. I went back to the farm. I planted 3,000 tomato plants with a crutch. So it was really good therapy. That's how I did it. And one piece at a time. And during that time, I really was taking a look at the computer stuff and where it was going. And I knew I was losing customers. And so I really looked at farming and said, hey, how can we do this? I looked into chickens and geese and, you know, all kinds of different things. I did a lot of fun things. I really like the fact that chickens come in like 10,000 different weird-looking things. And some of them are really, really weird. I mean, the little Polish ones with the little hat on top of their head, they're just the goofiest-looking things you've ever seen. But I really liked seeing the birds and all the different varieties. So I did a lot for a while, and then I decided, well, I think I kept reading things, and I'm a voracious reader, and I read on the New York Times about a guy bringing pigs in from Austria. And he had said that this pig, when he had it, he went to Austria and he tried the pig. He said, this is the most amazing pork I've ever put in my mouth. So I thought, well, I got to call this guy. I don't know why. I just prompted me to call him. I called him on the phone and I said, did this pig really taste that good? And he says, I'm not lying. This pig tastes the best I've ever eaten in my whole life. I said, well, can I buy some of those pigs? And he goes, nope, I'm not selling any breed stock. I said, all right. Well, can I buy some pigs from him? Well, yeah, you can buy a pig. So I bought one pig from him. At that time, I brought it to the farm and was raising it with other pigs. He kept telling me how that pig was number one in Europe, and that was the Mangalitsa. The Mangalitsa pig is also called the woolly pig, it's a big hairy pig. But it's also a lard-type pig, so it has a lot of fat on it. But I started doing research, and I found out that this guy was only using that as a marketing tool on all the people in the United States, telling them it's the number one pig in Europe, because it's not the number one pig in Europe. The number one pig in Europe is either the Iberico from Spain, and what people don't know about is they don't know anything about the Swabian Hall from Germany. But the Swabian Hall from Germany was winning all kinds of contests, but it's the whole town is built around this pig. Everything they do in the town is actually built around the pig since 1821. That pig was number one in almost every taste contest. And I thought, well, heck, I give the guys in Germany a call, and they said, no, we don't give those pigs out to anybody in the U.S. And I said, well, okay. But I started doing some more research, and I discovered that the pig was made in 1821. The Mangalitsa was made in 1892, 75 years later. So I knew that the heritage and bloodlines were still out there, and it said that King Wilhelm of Germany had created this pig by breeding the Meishan pig from China. Because, see, during that period of time, it's kind of like what we fall into here in the last 25 years. The pigs are too lean, too dry, too muscly. It's white meat. If you want white meat, go eat a chicken. That's not what pig is supposed to be. So back during that time, he wanted to add some fat to the pig, and apparently he found out somehow that these pigs existed in China. So they brought back the Meishan pig, which is the fattest pig in the world. This pig has so many unbelievable properties. It's unbelievable. It has litters of 15 to 20 in a litter. I mean, the fat hangs off this pig. It doesn't look like a big fat pig. It's not a big fat pig. It is, but when you look at it, they're like this thin. And you turn them around and look at them sideways, they're a big fat pig. Then you turn them sideways and they're only like this thin. It's because the fat actually hangs off of them. You can see that in the pictures. The ones with the really roly-poly face. But see, the Chinese did some really cool things. I mean, this pig has got a bloodline that goes back, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years. The Meishan pig was designed somewhat like the Shar Pei dog. The reason they had that skin is so that on the Chinese Shar Pei, when another dog bites it, it doesn't bite muscle, it only bites skin. On the Meishan pig, it was designed because the pigs were actually in China because they were that was their oil, that was their Iraq, that was their grease, that was their lights, their cooking oil, that was everything to them, grease for their wagons. And they had designed this pig to have large litters, huge litters. The rolls of fat on their skin and their head, that's all to maintain as much fat as that pig could ever have. 18% meat, 82% fat. And this pig was made specifically for the fat. But the meat was so good, even the Japanese and the Chinese love it as a delicacy. And Iowa State did a bunch of research and it had the pigs here from 1989. There's so many things that pig has going for it. These pigs can breed at 6 to 8 weeks of age. I mean, if any of you know anything about pigs, that doesn't happen. It usually takes 8, 9 months or 10 months to get it sour or boar up to breeding. But I got little pigs running around like this that are unbelievable in terms of their breeding capacity. You're having 3 times what conventional pigs have on the same amount of inputs. That's pretty powerful. If you could take that now and transpose that into the U.S. pig population, that changes the thing. That's a game changer right there. I think that's what they tried to do, but it didn't happen. The Meishan pig was such a good resource. When I was looking into this, I said, hey, I want to try to create the Swabian Hall from Germany. And I said, I think it would be a great idea if I did that. Well, then I find out there's no Meishan pigs anywhere in the United States. And I thought, well, that sucks. So I gave up the idea. And then about 2 months later, a friend of mine called me up because I had told a few friends about my idea, and of course they all laughed at me. But they said, there's some of these pigs at Iowa State. And they gave me a number, and I called it, and I said, do you guys speak Meishan? And they said, yeah, we do. And they said, you want some? I said, yeah, hey, I'd like 2 boars and 2 sows. They said, okay, I'll have them there tomorrow at 1 o'clock. And this is the day before, I was like, no, this is never going to happen. And then all of a sudden, the next day at 11:30, I had pigs in my... Mr. John Newton brought those pigs to my house. He was supposed to be there at 1 o'clock. He actually showed up at about 11:30. He called and said, hey, and I was like a half hour away. He says, hey, I got the pigs here. He says, where do they go? And I said, well, in this one barn. I said, hey, I'll be there to help you unload them because I've unloaded thousands of pigs, so I know it's not easy for one guy to do it, unless you really know what you're doing and your things are set up that way. What happens? He says, oh, I already got it done. I said, you got it done? And I had never seen a Meishan in my life. I'd only seen a picture of it. And the one I saw was an old grainy one like from China from like 80 years ago, so I didn't really know what they looked like. I drove in, and I came to the house, and here's John standing there at the end of the trailer, and he says, well, there's your pigs. And he's like, yep, 115 days from now, you're going to have pigs. I said, oh, that's good. Well, as it turns out, the Meishan is like a big St. Bernard, only with no attitude or nothing. They just walk in the room, and if you point them in the right direction and you kind of give them a nudge, they'll walk that way till they stop and hit something. And We actually move them from one building to another. We don't even use any equipment. We just open the door and let them out, and then we make them go, and you hit them on the left, and they go left. You hit them on the right a little bit, and they go to the right. And they just go into their pen. And it's amazing. These animals are absolutely amazing. Can foster their babies, so you can stick ducks or chickens or dogs on them. They don't care. They'll breed, and they'll just manage anything that you throw at them. They're just amazing creatures, and they're really, really good mothers. And they can have huge litters, and they have these big udders that are like a cow. Just amazing, because if you look at other pigs, they just don't have that. So here I am. I got this feller from Iowa State standing there saying, here's your pigs. And well, now I have to find a Russian, because in 1821, that's what they bred them to, was the Russian, big razorback type pig. And so I couldn't find those, and I found out real quick how bad they don't want the Russian boars in the United States. Because I was trying to get some from Illinois, and the next day I had three cops, state vet, and four DNR people, and they were all in my yard. And I'm like, "What are you guys doing here?" "Well, where's your Russian pigs?" I said, "Well, what does it matter? Why? I don't have any. I was just trying to get one." And they're going, "Oh, mind if we look in your barn?" "Sure." But they were there to tell me that I couldn't have Russian pigs, and I said, "Why?" And they said, "Well, you can't have Russian pigs unless you have insurance and all this, and it's a wild and dangerous animal and blah, blah, blah." I said, "Well, maybe you guys didn't read the little paragraph at the bottom where it says, farmers are exempt. I can raise them for food and fiber, and there's nothing you can do about it." So I handed them a Code of Iowa book, and I said, "Right here, look at that." So then they've left me alone ever since then. But I went ahead and I found the Russians. There was three guys left in the state of Iowa that had Russians, purebred Russians. Some of them were papered even. I got my first boar, which was Atlas. Probably one of the most interesting things is that I've had to do is learn about the breeds of pigs and, you know, the Meerschaum and its docility and its ability to just be great mothers. And Russians have the ability to be great mothers too. However, they will kill you. They will kill you and then eat you. There ain't no messing around. They teach you right up front, this is how we're going to be. And they don't like humans. I actually took some little ones, and I learned some tricks from the Mangalitsa lady in Holland, because she raises Mangalitsas, and she'll walk out into the pen and sit down, and the Mangalitsas will come up and lay on her and sit at her feet. They will actually fight each other for the first hug, and I ain't pulling your leg. She actually gives them a hug. She'll take the pig and rub their belly, and the pig will lay down on the ground and go into a trance and pass out, and she can comb them. She rubs their bellies. I mean, it's amazing. It's all from the beginning when you work with the pig, and I've learned that too. So none of our Russians are like that anymore, because I didn't get one that was already grown. I got them when they're little and worked with them. But I put the Russians together with the Meerschaum. We got the pigs. They had the first litters, and I thought, well, let's see what we've got for the pigs. I saw these little black pigs, and they were amazing. I mean, they had little floppy ears, and they had all these really neat, even at 21 days or even at 30 days, they had a quarter of an inch of back fat. That's more than any standard pig today has. They had more back fat than a 270-pound pig, and they're only not even a month old. They had all these neat little properties. I mean, they had like 16 teats, which most pigs don't have. You know, they have 9 or 10, 12 maybe. And that's almost exceptional. We raised them up so we could do a taste test. We raised them all up the same way. Tried to raise them up like they do in Europe, and we processed all the pigs. We had blind taste tests. And, of course, the Swabian won in every taste test we had. And I thought, well, that's my friends. They're going to tell me that anyway. But it was a blind taste test. So I thought, well, I don't know how they knew that, but turns out it was our pig. So I thought, well, if we take it to the next level, I mean, I don't want to mess around with this and spend 5 years developing this pig and not know if we had a good pig or not. So I saw the Cochon 555, which is French for pig, five chefs, five wines, and five pigs. And they did it in San Francisco. I called up the guy who runs it, and I said, hey, I'd like to put my pig in the contest. And he's like, I told him about the pig, and he's like, hey, oh, we want your pig really bad. We're going to give it to this chef. And so I ended up sending two pigs out to San Francisco for the event, one for the demonstration and one for the event. And later that night, we had won the event. My son kept saying to me, Dad, what if we win? I said, we're not going to win. Those pigs have been out there for a long time. And I said, we're not going to win. He said, what if you win? And I said, we're not going to win. And then we won, and they said, so now what are you going to do? So I said, well, I think we're going to have to keep on trying to raise the pig and do something more with it. So we did. So we started raising more of them, and we started creating the initial breed stock, and it just started going from there. And what I didn't do is I didn't walk out and say, here, buy this pig because I think it's the greatest pig in the world. I went out and I said, here, chef, I'm going to hand you a pig, and you've worked with pigs for 20, 30 years. Here, I'm going to give you a pig, and I want you to tell me about it. Because when Stéphane Turgeot got done with the pig, he gave me a complete rundown of everything about the pig that he knew. And I needed to make sure that that pig fit certain criteria. Otherwise, I didn't think it was going to be worth it at all. Everybody took their... They came in, and I handed them the chef, the pig, and they would come back, and they would confirm everything that was being said. The really, really good guys that knew how to disassemble a pig from nose to tail could tell me things about it, and they were teaching me about my own pig. But I had to know, from the chef's perspective, what was going to work for them. The big thing is chefs no longer have control. They get whatever falls off the Cisco truck, or whatever they can get from a guy down the road. But see, we don't have any more processing left in the state of Iowa. So you have a hard time getting anything that's fresh. So the chefs... when they come to me, I can tell them, hey, we can make a pig that does this and this and this and has these features. And the chefs, they couldn't believe that somebody was turning it around and asking them what they thought they wanted. Because the pigs you eat today are decided by the processor. Your processor is Hormel, Tyson. There's only 9 entities that own the entire pork market right now. There was 27 3 years ago. Now it's 9. And I believe with the Chinese buying Smithfield and everything else, I think it's probably even less now. But you have to eat what they determine you're going to eat. They will tell you that you're going to eat a pig that only has a 1/16 of an inch of back fat. But you see, there's lots of problems with the pigs we have today. They don't have enough fat on them to even breed. And the pigs that we have can breed. They have enough fat on them that it makes it easy for them to breed. Confinement pigs. Confinement pigs are, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that a pig that's standing in its own urine and feces on a daily basis, it's inhaling all of this, even if it's got filters and fans and all that, doesn't mean anything. The pig is still standing in it. They're breathing it. It's going into their bloodstream and into their muscles. Not only that, but the skin of the pig is absorbing all of this into its skin. And you know what it's like if you get something on your hand. It absorbs into your hand, gas or kerosene or whatever. You smell it in your hands. It doesn't go away like in 5 minutes. It has to either wear away or you've got to get it off somehow. And but then some of that stuff is so caustic it goes into your hands and you can't get it off for a long, long time. Can you imagine the pig standing in his own urine and feces 24 hours a day for the 5-6 months of his life? You're eating that. But see, U.S. pork production processors skin them and take the head off and throw it away. If you made a car and I told you you had to throw 27% of the car away before you could sell it to you, you'd look at me and go, well, you're an idiot. I'm not going to take 27% of my car and throw it away. I'm going to sell you 100% of the car. Look at me. I'm the guy who's going to sell you 100% of the pig. I'm not going to go have my pig skinned and head cut off because the skin of my pigs is valued by the Mexicans, chefs. All these things that we make from the skin of the pigs that are good for you, that are healthy, that taste good. I mean, unbelievable some of the stuff they make. To throw away the head of the pig. And if you're in the culinary world, we have chefs that can make $500 just on the head of the pig alone. Just on the head. That means the rest of the pig is free profit. All the loins, all the pork chops, all the hams, that's all free. Because they made their money on the head. But we're throwing them away and feeding them to dogs. I think that's wrong. And not everybody in here is going to say, ooh, I want some edgies. Because a lot of people go, oh man, I don't want that. You know, not everybody wants to eat the eyeball of the pig. But there's a lot of people that will. You'd be surprised. But the thing is, we've got to be able to make more and better products. And you can't take this American approach of saying, well, we'll just take the head and the skin, throw it away, and then you have to deal with the pig. And that's where... we try to make this good pig, we use the skin, we use the head, we use everything on the pig, and the chefs really like that. And the chefs like having the control. Because now they can utilize every part of the pig. So when you meet new chefs and you say, hey, are you a pork chop chef or are you a chef? Well, I'm a chef. Okay, can you cut this pig up? Well, no. Well, then you're not a chef yet. If you can only do pork chops, then that's what you see. See, we were talking earlier in the car about the state of where things are and where you... get your food and how you see it, and like how kids have chicken now. They don't know that chicken actually has a bone in it. We've gotten so disconnected from our food and what we eat and how we take care of it and all of these things. And what people don't know is in the state of Iowa, all the processing here is gone. We have no more pig farmers here than the Heritage Pig Market, except for your Nyman Ranch or your Eden Farm guys that are producing their pigs and going through a big processor. But for the guy that's raising 500 pigs or 1,000 pigs a year, there's no place to get your pig processed to be able to send it out of the state of Iowa to bring money in from like Illinois or Chicago or New York. I have to take my pigs on a 500-mile round trip. I have to go to Trenton, Illinois. I got to go to Lake City, Minnesota. Or I have to go to St. Louis, Missouri. I have to go someplace in Chicago. But I can no longer get any of my animals processed here in the state of Iowa. And it's a real problem. because I can't sell my pigs for $6 a pound hanging weight in the state of Iowa. Nobody is going to, they'd rather eat the confinement pig than pay that much for a pig. But the big cities will pay those prices. And we do have a better pig. We do have better meat. But we can't do that here. And so I try to make the pigs affordable, and I run them through restaurants here, and I sell them to a lot of the guys who really are really into doing lots of really neat and artisan-type things. But there's no way for us to make it sustainable. So I have to be able to process my pigs and get them USDA processed so I can take them out of state. The only place you can get your stuff processed now is through Tyson, through Supreme Pack, Pine Ridge, and Des Moines. And the problem with that is they buy your pigs and they assimilate them and put them into their own system. You can't take your pigs in and have them processed, take them out and resell them. And you have to take in like semi-loads. You can't just take in 35 or 40 pigs or 10 pigs. You can't do that. They want to charge $800 to take them off and put them on. And then they say, we just don't want to do it anymore. You may think, well, the butcher down the street, but I don't know. Presumably, you've all come from some town somewhere. And these little towns are losing their butchers, they're losing their bakers, they're losing anybody who made a staple. They're all gone. And there's still some little towns hanging on, but if you look, those guys are being run by guys that are like 55 to 65 years old, and their kids are no longer involved in it. They don't want to do pork processing or pig processing. When dad's done with it and sells it, he can't sell it because to get it inspected, it's going to take $200,000 to put it back in business, because to meet all the code violations and everything, because they go from one owner to the next, they shut everybody down. And they're coalescing them or putting them all together into one, two, or three regional locations, and that puts us out of business. Boom, done. Because if we raise a pig, we cannot take that pig and make money with it if we can't get it processed. If I can't get it turned into ham or bacon, I just end up with a whole bunch of pigs getting really fat. You end up with nothing. You have nothing to sell. So they hold our destiny, you know, right there. See, and I didn't know all these things. See, I took these pigs and I raised them. It took me 2.5 years from the day I started breeding them, the day John Newton was there, to getting a pig so that I could kill it and eat it. Well, so I spent all this time learning about pigs and breeds and everything else. I thought I had it down pat. We got our pigs organized. They were having litters at the right times, and we were doing all these things. So I'm like, wow, now it's time to go get them processed. Boy, that was the biggest slap in the face. Because now I had to learn about all the processing, the three different ways that they process, and how many things you can't do. They never tell you what you can do. They tell you all the things you can't do. I would have never gotten in the pork industry if I'd have known what the processing was like, because it's totally unviable. What we're trying to do right now is set up our own processor and do this, but now they're making it really, 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 really hard for guys like me to actually set up a processing plant. Like $3.5 million just to build a little bitty one the size of this room to make it fit all of the specs, to make it so that it's all USDA feasible and everything else. It's really hard for us to try to make that leap and keep going. But what I'm doing that none of the other guys are doing is I'm seeding farmers. I'm finding a pig farmer and I give him 10 or 12 or 20 sows and I breed them and give them to him, and he's having the litters and then developing more breed stock and then developing our pigs so that I put them all in a trailer and I haul them to Trenton, Illinois, and I'll have them processed. I'm not going to let them stop me. I mean, I've had Missouri come to me and say, hey, you can call them Missouri Swabian Hall, and then we'll give you a farm and land and everything. I said, dude, I'm not from Missouri. I'm from Iowa, and I got the Iowa Swabian Hall, and this is why I call it this, is because I'm from here. And so they're like, well, okay, but the offer still stands. I said, no. We'll figure out a way to do it. That's what we do in Iowa. We figure out how to do it. If they slam one door on your face, you figure out how to open another one. That's what we've been doing. They try to stop us, and we keep going, and I take those pigs. And now, so what I've done is I've set these farmers up so that they're making money on their pigs. Conventional farmers are losing anywhere from $38 to $58 a head. And you say, well, how can they sustain that? Well, they can sustain it long enough to make us go away. Then they own the entire market, including the genetics. Once all the heritage pig farmers are gone, which won't be very long, another 3 years, and most of them will be gone without somebody keeping the Gloucester Old Spots and Hampshires. But all those pigs are actually from Europe. They're from England. We didn't have any real pigs that were developed here. And I hate to see all those bloodlines go, but they're going to over the next few years, unless we get guys like me that are crazy enough to stand up and hold the ground and try to get other farmers involved. And I have like six of them now. They're taking our pigs. And we had one guy last week. He had six of them, and he had huge litters, 14 in a litter. You know, I'm able to prove to them what we're doing is actually what I've been saying. We can have big litters. You can have really good pigs. I buy those pigs from them, and I can give them double the market rate or triple the market rate. And then I sell them to the various chefs and others throughout the nation. That's what we're trying to do on our farm, and that's what we've come around to. And, you know, my life is really kind of weird. I was standing out in the middle of an Amish barnyard, and the New York Times was taking a picture and videotaping me, and the writer's writing a story about our pigs, and I get a phone call from a production studio that wants me to be in a television series. This is while I'm standing in an Amish barnyard with pigs, crap up to my knees, and I'm taking a phone call with the New York Times looking at me. It was the most absurd thing I'd ever... Yeah, I'll be in... You know, your TV series? Yeah. Can I call you back in just a little bit? And then, you know, 2 weeks later, the New York Times comes out with a front page story, and then all of a sudden, the Colbert Show wants me to be on the Colbert Report. 12 minutes after it came out in the New York Times, the Colbert Show called and said, here, we need you to be on our show. And I said, the what? She says, well, I'm Stephanie from the Colbert Show. I said, ah, you're full of it. No, really. I said, no. I said, Jamie, are you pulling a stunt on me? So I said, no. She says, well, I'll prove it. And I said, how are you going to prove it? She says, well, here, call this number back. And I called it back, and of course, they answered Colbert Show. And I was like, oh. So now I got her on the phone and talked to her, and she says, yeah, we want you on the show. And they said, can you bring pigs? I go, do what? Pigs to New York? I said, you know there was a Green Acres show with, they took Arnold Ziffel to Hollywood, right? No. I said, oh, she's not old enough. I said, well, are you going to cover the cost? They said, yeah, we'll take care of everything. You just get the pigs to New York. And I said, okay. They said, we need you here this day and this day, and here's your motel and everything else. And when we found one motel in the city of New York, they really want you here because they apparently take really weird animals and things like that in their motel. And all I could think of was, oh, no, I'm going to go like in a hut or something, you know. Or it's going to be on some real nasty part of town, and it's not going to be good. But turns out it was actually a good motel. I told her, I said, well, I can't bring one pig. I have to bring two. And she said, why? I said, well, because one pig will just be freaked the whole time. If he's got a buddy in there, they can cuddle and it will be okay. She says, yeah, bring two. I said, okay. We were trying to get in on the airport, and I got to the airport, and the lady goes, pigs? I said, yep, I got to take two pigs. We can put them in with the pets. And she goes, well, no, we have every animal listed, and there's no pig. I said, what about swine? She goes, no, swine. I said, okay, these are just really ugly dogs. The plane's going to leave in 8 minutes. I said, they're really ugly dogs. She says, okay. And she put on their dogs. And they went in the hold instead of with me on the plane, because I said I didn't really want them in the plane. God knows, it would reek the whole plane, you know? So they went in the cargo hold. And they flew all the way from there to Detroit, from Detroit to New York. Got off the plane. I must have walked I don't know how many miles to get where we were supposed to be, and got there, and we were waiting at the store. They said, wait at the store for your pigs. I said, okay. So I waited at the door, and the guy came through, and he was holding two pet taxis, and they were kind of blue. And I looked at him, and I go, no, those aren't ours, because I have one pet taxi, and it's brown. He goes, no, man, these are yours. And I said, no. And he says, these are your pigs. I said, no, those aren't pigs. And so I thought, nobody else has pigs. And then he goes, no, pigs. And he looks at them, and then he holds them up. And I go, no, man, those are Lhasa Apso's, puppies. Those are just really, really ugly dogs. They're not pigs. And I take one out, and I hold it up, and I go, that's not a pig. He's looking at it. He wasn't sure even then. He puts the dogs back in the kennel, and I was afraid somebody was either roasting them, eating them, or they got sent off somewhere else. And, of course, they did find our pigs and took the pigs, and we let them outside. They wouldn't go to the bathroom. And as it turns out, the little pig, we had one named Little Smokey, and then the other one, he had the runs. But I didn't know that. And so we got to the motel and took them out and put them in the motel, and the poor little pigs, I put them in the little pen. They had a pen and everything right there for us. I put the little pigs in there, and I noticed the black pig was like, he was bloated up. I'm standing there watching him, and all of a sudden, the little black pig like went off. And all the way across the room, right through the machine, right into the walls, and he scared himself so bad, he spun around, and it's all over the walls, and I was like, oh my God, we've got to go to this show in 48 minutes, and we have a 63-minute cleanup before we can even get these pigs out of there. So I'm grabbing these little pigs, and I'm just dumping them in the bathtub, and we're washing them and cleaning them. That poor little pig held it all the way for like 12 hours, and he had the runs. I mean, that poor little guy, I felt so bad for him. And So that was just one part of it. I will never, ever take pigs to New York again. And I will never fly with another pig. When pigs fly is what that's going
to
happen.
You are listening to Heart of Iowa on KHOI Community Radio. Today, we are listening to a recording of the lecture, In Pursuit of the Perfect Pig, given by Iowa pig farmer Carl Blake. Hugh Blake is on a quest to breed the country's tastiest pig by following a 19th century German formula. The lecture was recorded as part of the National Affairs Series on Innovation at Iowa State University on October 18th, 2013.
Down in the middle of town, and I'm walking down, and I've got these pigs in the carrier. This big black guy comes up and goes, "You're the pig man. I know you're the pig man." I said, "No, man, I'm not the pig man." And his buddy goes, no, I know you're the pig man. You're definitely the pig man." I said, no. And then I hold up the cage, and it's got the two pigs, and then they both look in there. "Yeah, you are the pig man." So I was like, okay, even guys in New York are starting to notice me from this silly Andrew Zimmern show. And these guys sounded like they were from the hood, you know. I didn't know what was going to happen. And they're like, "Can we get our picture with you?" I'm like, "Oh, yeah, that'd be great." So I took a bunch of pictures, and we had a lot of fun with it. And then we did the Colbert Show. He was a great guy. I went in, and we went in the green room, and he came in and introduced himself. And he said, "Now, you just pretend like you're teaching me." And I said, "Yeah, I can do that." He looks me square in the eye, and he says, "Now, just remember, don't let me get away with anything." And I said, "Well, I'm your man. I'm not going to let you get away with anything. Because, I've seen what he does to people." And the thing that most disconcerted me the most was that they spent an hour interviewing me and recording it and playing it for their writers, but not one second did I know what the hell he was going to say or do. They didn't tell me nothing. They just threw me out there and sitting on that chair with him. So I got a pretty uneasy feeling for the first minute and a half. I couldn't even talk. My mouth was so dry. And then when he mentioned commie pigs, that really started ticking me off, but it was kind of funny. But yet, he said I had to raise a Chinese pig, mated to a Russian pig, to make a German pig in Iowa. Oh, yeah. "All them commie pigs, do you have to raise a commie? Can't you raise a U.S. pig?" And I said, "No. You know why I don't eat U.S. pork?" And I said, "U.S. pork sucks." I didn't get to finish because you cut me off right away. "U.S. heritage pigs are actually really good, but U.S. confinement pigs suck. John Deere's pulled my sponsorship for the movie, for our television series, because I said U.S. pork sucks." They said I offended the largest population of their clientele. And I'm like, oh, well. Do anybody have any questions?
We have a mic.
Yeah.
I have two questions. What weight do you market your pigs at, and how big is your swine herd?
My breeding herd is about 120. And then feeder pigs right now, there could be anywhere from 50 to 200 on the ground. But that's getting bigger every because I started using other farmers now. So that's coming along. And then the first question was, what? The pigs go out anywhere from 10 pounds up to 350. We have real suckling pigs. They don't actually eat any real food, and they go to somebody like Charlie Trotter in Chicago. I mean, they'll pay $200 for a pig like that. Everyone thinks, well, you want to kill a piglet. Well, no, it's not that, It's like in The Lion King. Some of those animals, they have a life cycle like this, and in the circle of life, the other ones have a little one, I call every one of them bacon or pork chop, depending on what they walk by. Hercules has a name because Hercules is Hercules. I mean, he can flat foot jump 9 feet, and he can bench press himself. He's almost 500 pounds. And if he can't eat it, why, he'll do other bad things to it. That's a really good question. When I found out it was $600 a ton to be able to feed the pigs, and then I found out why pig farmers don't farm pigs. This is really easy because your inputs cost more than what you get on the output. It just doesn't work. And so I had to figure out a better way to feed them. So in all my research, I had read time and time again how in Europe they used fodder. And I'm like, well, what's fodder? I mean, I know what fodder is, but it's green stuff. In Europe, they don't feed pigs and cows soy and corn. None of it. And for good reason. Today's pigs go rancid in like 2 days. You kill the pig, hang it up, and go rancid in 2 days. That's part of the American way of trying to get pigs in and out and get them sold right away and get them in your hands and eat it really fast because we're going to sell you more of them. But the reality is Iowa State has a brochure that says, do not age U.S. pork. And it says right above here, age U.S. beef and how to do it and all this stuff. But then right there's a note right in the middle that says, do not age U.S. pork. I said, what the hell is that all about? Why can't we have prosciutto? Why can't we have lomo? Why can't we have a good copa? Why can't we have guanciale? Like all the Italians do and the Spaniards. And I'm wondering, why the heck can't we have that? Well, we can't because the pigs aren't fed the right stuff, number one. And number two, they don't have the right genetics. And that's why my pig is perfectly suited for that, because they've been doing it for over 200 years with the same bloodlines back in Germany. And they do make a good pancetta. They do. My pig, actually, my one-year-age Swabian beat a three-year-aged Iberico in two taste contests. That's a world-class pig here, built in the United States with what I could find to make that work. Well, you can't do that with a pig. You can't do that with a Berkshire. I mean, they can tell you they feed an acorn Berkshire. I told them to use acorns a long time ago, but that was before I figured out that the pigs had to be genetically predisposed to be able to utilize that, because it just doesn't make taste any better. You just spend a whole lot of money on feed. And that's where you need to have a pig that can turn that into something. And so in trying to figure out what that was, I said, well, maybe we can try, you know, hydroponics and grow our own fodder. First off, what I discovered was in the whole hydroponics industry, nobody could make more than 250 pounds at a time. We got to be able to make like 3, 4, 5, 6 tons at a time to do us any good. And so I started looking at all these various things out there, and I saw the one that I saw was closest to being able to do that. They could produce 1,000 pounds. And so I looked at what they were doing and how they were doing it, and I contacted them, and how about if I get you on the Andrew Zimmern show, I want a couple of those chambers. And they're like, yeah, cool. All right. 3 days later, I had two $60,000 chambers sitting in my backyard. Wow. Last week, I was just talking about fodder, and I have the two biggest chambers in the entire Midwest. I could produce 1,000 pounds a day in one chamber, okay? And that's either human consumption, or it can be feed for the pigs. Well, as it turns out, we can replace 143 acres of land with one chamber. 143 acres of land. Prime land that makes alfalfa cuts three times a year. We can produce as much as they do in 1 year with a chamber that's no bigger than one of those. Actually, it's shorter than that, about three chairs over. It's 25 foot by 12 foot by 10 foot. I might be crazy, but I can show you. If you go to Centro's or Django's in Des Moines, and you can talk to the head chef, Johan or Derek, they've got a big room downstairs they've been working on for the last 2 years. They've been aging my pork. And they have a whole bunch of it right now that's coming available. And go down there and ask them. Say, hey, I want to try some of this. I ain't pulling your leg. And I mean, the stuff they've made is unbelievable. But that's because of what we feed our pigs. And then the hydroponics, the one thing that makes it so cool is that the animal goes out in the field and they eat the green stuff, right? They don't get what's in the ground. They don't get the roots. But when we do the hydroponics, you're getting the green stuff, all the chlorophyll and everything, but you're getting the most important part, which is the root. The root system has all the vitamins and the enzymes and everything that it needs. I mean, I haven't given a pig a shot in 6 months. I haven't given, we have scours. I just throw them a handful of hydroponically grown barley, and it's gone the next day. Don't ask me how or why. And I thought, well, this is just weird things happening to me. Well, I've told other farmers, because other farmers call me about this stuff all the time, and they say, hey, can you tell me about hydroponics? Teach me. So I tell them how to build a hydroponic system, and I tell them exactly how to set it up, you know, a small-scale one, so they can learn how to do small scales, and they can scale it up later. And I said, so what have you found out? The first thing they say is, well, you know what, eliminate scours. And I don't have, and the pigs don't have any of the pneumonia and all that stuff anymore. I'm not a scientist, and I don't know everything, and all I can do is say, what's happening in front of me? But the problem is that the pigs that we're trying to raise as feeder pigs to sell to the restaurants, they can't get fat on that. So one of the things I'm doing is I'm working with trying to develop a better hydroponic feed that we can give them. And one of them includes using lupine. Lupine is actually the equivalent of soybean. It has nitrogen nodules in it. But you know what? And it's a flower, but it's also a legume. You can actually take lupine and grow it just like barley, go out and use the same equipment, and gather this and gather it just the same way, and it's just a little seed, but you can grind that and make bread out of it. I own a bakery, too, totally by chance. that's a whole other story. But I have a bakery. So one of the neat things is I've learned that you can't take a soybean and then grind it up and make it into bread. Anybody's ever tried to eat a soybean? It just doesn't taste good. But the fact is that what we're able to do with a lupine, and since 1982, the seeds disappeared. You can't even buy them in the United States. You can buy a few flowers in here, and you can get a little packet of them, but you can't get anything to plant a seed with. You can't get a seed company to come up with it. But they're using them in Australia. They're using them in Germany. They're using them in Amsterdam and Holland, and they feed all their animals this because it puts the fat on them real well. I've tried twice to get, like, carloads of seed into the United States, and I keep getting shut off at the borders. I want a lot of seeds. I've got farmers out that'll plant them for me. I want to find out myself if it works for us. You know, I can talk about it, and they can say, well, it doesn't work. Well, no. The soybean guys are kicking you out, and the corn guys are making you go away. They don't want another plant that's equivalent to the soybean here. But I do, because not only can we make food, feed and stuff from it, we can feed our pigs. And our pork, I mean, I put like 5 pigs online, and they were sold in like 12 minutes. I can't keep up. But in the meantime, I've actually developed another pig. It's called Iowa Black Beauty. And it's a little bit different pig. It still has the Meerschaum, because we need a lot of the qualities of the Meerschaum. But it's a bigger pig that grows faster, with a lot more lard on it, because if you have the right lard, our bodies want it. You take my bacon and put it on a pan, room temperature, it turns clear. You can read the logo on your knife, okay? You can take the fat from my pig and render it down and pour it into a mason jar, and you can see through it like water. I can take 10 other breeds of pigs, and not one of them, the best ones in the United States, you can't see through the jar because it's foggy. Now, that's because of the impurities and stuff in the lard. It's not the right kind of lard. So our lard, when you use it in baked goods and breads and things like that, we use that coupled with Hansen's dairy butter and products, and it's all natural. I mean, my Bismarcks were only that big before. Them suckers are that big now. And I can't make them smaller. So it's done amazing things, but when you taste the cream horns, it's like, oh. That's one of the things we're doing, is we're trying to integrate what we're doing with the pigs, and the lard is so, so good. It's unbelievable. And I get all these guys telling me, hey, you know, you can't do this and you can't do that, and it's not genetics, and oh, it's what you feed them. Well, I'm going to argue it's a little bit of both, but I think more so on the genetic side. Yes, ma'am.
Where's your bakery?
In Waverly, Iowa. There was a bakery in Waterloo, Iowa called Johnson's Bakery. They were there for 62 years. And they just closed about 3 months ago. And then there was another bakery in Waverly. The owner had cancer and he was dying. He'd been there for 67 years. By a whole bunch of weird circumstances, all of a sudden, I ended up, all the bakers at Johnson came to work for me, and I bought the Waverly Bakery from the guy who was dying of cancer. And I just kind of mixed 129 years of people together and recipes and stuff, and boom, we got a whole new bakery. And the guy who, this was the nephew of the owner of the one in Waterloo, he called me up and says, hey, can I work on your pig farm? And I said, sure, as long as you can show up 2 days in a row, not drunk, not on meth, and you actually show up on time, you got a job for life if you can do that. He says, well, I've been at the same job for 23 years. And I said, well, that's weird. He says, I've never been late. I've never missed a day of work in my life. And I'm thinking, well, that's kind of weird. But why do you want to work on the farm and do pigs? He says, well, because I just don't think this... This is my family business. My uncle shut down the business, didn't even tell me. He gave me 9 days. I live above the bakery, and I work in the bakery. I've been here since I was 7 years old. My grandfather's the one who started it. He just decided to shut it down and sold the building, and I live in it. He says, so I don't have a job or a place to live. I said, so what the hell did you come to me for? I raise pigs. And he goes, well, because I see what you're doing with these pigs. And he says, the marketing and everything that you're doing. He says, you need a bun for your pulled pork. I said, well, yeah. He says, I've seen you talk about the pulled pork buns you had and they sucked. I said, well, I got the best I could get. He says, but I could fix your problem. Because every time our meat was so juicy, you put it in the bun and the buns would just kind of melt after a few minutes. They would just kind of become goo. And he says, no, I can fix that. I can fix that. And I'm like, well, this guy's got to be nuts. I need to meet with him. And he said, here, look at this. And he goes, can you get this bakery here and do this? And I said, I don't know. Let me see. So I looked into it, and I don't know. It's just weird. All these things came together, and next thing I know, I own a damn bakery. The nephew who's been doing them, he knows them by heart. He actually can mix those the dough and everything with his hands. He doesn't use any mixing tool, any measuring tools. He knows exactly how much of this and how much of that, and he slaps it into a bowl, mixes it up, and these perfect buns come out. And so that's really what's happened, you know, to get us that bakery. But see, now we've got the bakery, and it really works well with our pork, because we sell our own special bun with our pulled pork. We have our tenderloin bun. We have our own brat bun, because we make our own brats too. So you're seeing, what you're seeing is the beginning of things that are starting to, I'm starting to get it together and make it work and make it happen. And I'll tell you right now, in the first 4 years, I'm not going to tell you how many times I wanted to quit, because it was so, everybody and everything has made it so difficult to make it work. You know, I guess I hold on like a bulldog and I don't really want to let go. So I keep at it and keep going. And just about the time when I think everything's gone to hell and I need to quit, something happens that just like, you're an idiot. Keep going. And it's really weird. Yes, ma'am.
We have time for one more question.
So you talked earlier about the state of our pork industry and meat industry in general. Could you talk a little bit more about how we help you fight it? I mean, how do we get involved? I mean, other than just buying your products, I mean, what are the other things you think we can do to...
I think the pork industry, a lot of things have happened that are like, you know, the wolves pulled over our eyes so fast and so hard that to try to reawaken it is going to be really difficult. I can see where things are changing now, and this was what gave me the most hope. I've had, what's a national pork board, or is it board of national pork, I don't know, whatever, the national guys that run the national pork things, they don't like me at all. But it's funny, because I was actually, they wrote a story about us in the Professional Farmer magazine. Their head scientist actually agreed with me on almost everything. And then the next day I found out they're going to fire him. And because it's not what they wanted to hear. But he agreed with him that the problem is that the meat quality has gone down. There's no fat. You can't do any breeding. He agreed with me. We got guys out there that they're raising all these really hardcore Grand National Champion pigs. And they're raising them and they sell them to the FFA kids and the 4-H people. Well, I had two of the top ones in the country in the last 2 weeks call me and say, this is a dead end. The show pigs are done. We can't do anything with it. The stuff they want us to do to make these pigs is not only not capable of doing, but it's totally unrealistic. And it has nothing to do with what we eat. And they said, we're done with this. We want to go into meat pigs, and we want your genetics. We don't want the other genetics that are out there. And I just about fell out of my chair. Here's guys that are like doing millions of dollars worth a year, and they called me sir. Yeah, take that one. They want my pigs. So it's changing, okay? We are seeing the change. And what could you do as individuals? Right now, we don't have any processing in the state of Iowa, like I said. We have a little processing plant down in Sigourney. Three kids, 27 years old, and they're all, you know, the engineers. They went to Iowa or Iowa State, and they have a processing plant there. And it's USDA certified. But they don't know how to make it work. They're engineers. They got everything to make it work, but now they don't know what the hell to do when they get a cow in there. But supporting something like that, we need a USDA processing plant in order to get more farmers back, because we need to be able to sell our products outside the state of Iowa. If I'm raising the best pig in the United States, I have to be able to bring money in from outside of the state of Iowa. That's the only way I can do it, and bring money into Iowa. We're not doing that anywhere. You know, here's the confinement pig market. Thousands upon thousands upon thousands of litters of pigs are raised. They're raised in Missouri and raised in Canada, and some are raised in Illinois, and a bunch of them are in North Carolina. Those little pigs get on a truck and they come here. They go to a confinement facility. They're here for 5 months, almost to the day. They come out of there. They go to Tyson, which there's nobody in the state of Iowa has any money in Tyson. It's out of the state of Iowa. They process the pigs. They put them in a box, and they take them out of the state of Iowa. The only thing they leave in the state of Iowa is their crap in the confinement facilities. And then we put that on our fields. That's the only thing we get out of this. That's why it's important for guys like me, because we're raising a family farm. We're having our families live here. All the people that we know and love. We've lost our heritage. I haven't even seen a hayride in 10 years. I mean, I saw one the other day at the university, but that's not really a hayride. If we continue any further, we're gonna, in another 3 years, if we don't turn this around a little bit, we're going to lose all of our Iowa heritage. That, to me, is sad, because I used to be able to, you know, you used to be able to walk to the farmer's house, and well, now you can't even find a farmer to go walk to their house, because they tore down every house and planted corn on top of it and took out the fence rows and planted corn on top of that. You don't have nothing. I'm up here in Frederick, Iowa, and I have to drive 500-600 miles just to get my pigs processed. Nobody's dumb enough to do that. Except me. But I could move somewhere else, but that's not what I'm going to do. That's not what I'm about. So, yes, sir?
Do these pigs have an environmental preference, air conditioning,
Yeah. Our pigs are actually suitable for just about any kind of environment. The Meishan was actually built by the Chinese to live in the lowland and the highland mountain regions of China. I mean, we had the best of the best, if you ask me, in terms of genetics and bloodlines. And
there's some baby pig disease going around right now.
Don't get me off into that. The problem is that a lot of these diseases, they're actually, I don't think they have anything to do with being a disease. I think some of that stuff's planted and done for a reason. And in fact, our first year, we lost 3 piglets out of about 500. That was unbelievable. And then the next year, because somebody poisoned my pigs, I lost over 600 just in one group. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's when it comes to the diseases and all these things out there, I think that our pork industry, they deliberately infect herds in certain areas and things to knock out some and knock some down so they don't have so many pigs from here. I mean, I think there's lots of these things going on. And I know the guys who poisoned my pigs. And after I stepped on their front doorstep, they were gone 3 days later. Then nobody knew where they moved to. So I don't know. I can't explain some of this stuff. All I know is that I got cameras now and I've got a gun. You see, it turns out my cousin, he's the top. He's actually a vet and he lives in Illinois, but he's from here and their family's raised pigs for the last 70 years, and he's a veterinarian, but he's also an expert on PRRS, PRRS is a porcine respiratory disease. But that's what my pigs were killed with. They injected them, and then all the pigs were born dead. They're alive right up until the day they're supposed to be born, and the minute they're born, they immediately die. It doesn't kill the sows, but it kills all the piglets. But what they didn't know, the guys didn't know and understand, is that my pigs are hyperprolific, and I was able to come back. But if I'd have been any other pig farmer, it would have never have happened. I could have never come back from that. So they were trying to put me out. I don't know how to solve these problems, but when it came to this PRRS disease, they said, well, it comes in the air. No, it doesn't. It doesn't just happen in the air. If you look at where the little red dots are and who's got PRRS and why and where, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't just happen in the air. But that's what they've got us led to believe, and all the pig farmers. Well, my cousin, he's an expert on PRRS, and he writes these papers on it, and I call him up and find out he's the head honcho. And he said, well, you know, Carl, the weirdest thing is we have all these outbreaks, and we've actually spent millions of dollars to make sure that we have certain quadrants in our state that it's not possible because it's airborne or whatever, and we track the vehicles that go in and the tires and everything else. And he says, but why is it all of a sudden these guys can get infected and these guys over here don't? And I said, that's because it's being man-made. And then it never dawned on him to think that it was a man-made thing until I told him. Now all of a sudden, yeah, he's pretty well freaked out about that. I know those things are happening. They've tried to kill my pigs a bunch of times, but you see, I've taken pigs. I've got pigs in different states. I've got little pods everywhere. I'm using biodiversity in order to keep that. I mean, even if they kill all the pigs on my property, they're dead and gone. Doesn't matter. Next week, I can have my pigs replaced. And I'm getting them from various places. And I have other people raising them. I mean, I've got Amish raising them. I've got Amish raising my pigs. And I'm talking, I know the difference between the Amish and the Mennonites. And I use old order Amish. Because they barely communicate with themselves. They don't use a phone. They don't use electricity. My pigs are the greenest pigs on the planet. Hell, they don't even use electricity to run water. They run it with wind. That's a green pig.
All right,
so,
let's.
So I keep them that way, and that's how we do it. So, oh,
all
sorry.
Right. No, thank you. Thank you, Carl. Let's give our speaker a round of applause.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Heart of Iowa on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the visions, actions, and ideas of people in Central Iowa. Today, we featured a recording of the lecture, In Pursuit of the Perfect Pig, given by Iowa pig farmer Carl Blake, who Blake is on a quest to breed the country's tastiest pig by following a 19th century German formula. Blake shared his experiences in a lecture called In Pursuit of the Perfect Pig. Blake's lecture was recorded is part of the National Affairs Series on Innovation at Iowa State University on October 18, 2013. The talk was co-sponsored by Bacon Expo and the Culinary Science Club, as well as the National Affairs Series and Committee on Lectures, which are funded by the government of the student body. You can find out more about Blake's Pig Farm at rusticroosterfarms.com. For more information on ISU lectures, go to www.lectures.iastate.edu. Thank you for listening and supporting Community Radio in Central Iowa.